Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, May 10th, 2016. With me today, I have John Martellaro. And how are you, John?
I am good. Good morning.
Good morning. It's good to have you here. And Dave Hamilton, it's good to have you too.
It's good to be here. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, I'm glad that you both found it in your hearts to join me today. Hey, we have a sponsor, and that sponsor is Bushel, which is pretty awesome. I'll be talking about them soon. But before we get to that, John, you think that Apple might have some big problems getting their Apple Car out the door. So I wanted to take a look at that.
One of the issues in my mind is the big challenge that's facing Tesla in terms of delivering quality cars. I saw a video, I think it was something Unplugged, a British production. A fellow was describing his P85D and driving his own 85D and driving a test P90D in ludicrous mode. And while he was driving along, he had the GoPro cam pointed at him as the Top Gear guys do. And he was fiddling with the rubber molding along the window and talking about how BMW doesn't have this problem. And clearly he was not impressed with the build.
And you're
quality.
Talking about Tesla cars right now, right?
Yeah, right. Okay. And so all of a sudden, we have this massive explosion in demand for Tesla, and it's going to be a huge challenge acquiring all the lithium that they need for the batteries, keeping quality control under control, managing the factory, meeting customer demands, putting together 200,000 cars over the space of about a year. And the question in my mind is that if they fail or stumble in this, it's going to be a great learning experience for Apple. But if they succeed brilliantly and they're building 200,000 cars in 2017 and 18, and they're building 500,000 cars a year in 2019 or 2020, and GM, of course, has got the Chevy Bolt, and other companies are going to be jumping in. How is Apple going to jump into this market with something that is especially appealing and gives them the growth path that they want? You know, the car market's kind of tough, and they've got a tough act to follow. They've got a lot of learning to do. There's manufacturing challenges. Of course, one of the nice things is that Apple looks like it has a good deal of expertise in robotics and also in manufacturing, machining, metallurgy, chemistry, things like that. So right now, it's kind of like Schrodinger's cat. You know, is Apple's car in the box? Is it dead or is it alive? We don't know yet until we do a measurement in 2019 and see where Apple pops up in the marketplace, and whether they have a car that's so cool everybody forgets about everything else and Apple has a new growth product, or whether the industry has passed them by that time.
By
not technology passed them by, I mean by production capacity.
See, I don't think Apple cares about that. I mean, if we look at everything that Apple has ever done, they always start out with a small run in the high end, right? And then slowly go down from there, but not all the way down to the bottom, right? It's always, hey, we saw this market opportunity. It's being served by a couple of other vendors at the moment. But we found a place where we can really compete here, and we're going to start out here. And it might not be the uber high end, right? But it might be. But it could also be, you know, the higher. It's certainly going to be higher than the middle, right, where Apple starts out. Will Apple ever, with a car or a watch or anything else, will they ever kind of dip down? Maybe. You know, they did with the iPod eventually. They're starting to dabble with that with the phone. But I think Apple can almost follow Tesla's exact model here, right? Where Tesla started out with this super high-end vehicle that was just sort of like, well, we need to get our feet wet and prove this concept not only to you as the customer, but to us as the company. And I don't think Apple needs to start out quite at, you know, where Tesla did at the high end, but I think they can start at a high end given what we as a culture sort of have already learned from Tesla, I think that's totally fine. And, you know, Apple clearly has some of their own robotics intelligence that they've sort of developed over the years. I don't. And you know, let's face it, batteries are something that Apple has needed to manage for a long time. Mm-hmm. In terms of production and you know, the sourcing of them. Obviously, Tesla definitely has a leg up there, unless there's something about Apple that they've really been hiding well. I mean, Tesla right now has the capacity to build more lithium ion batteries than everyone else combined, right, at the moment anyway. So Tesla's probably going to beat them out there. But that's the thing is, you know, Tesla needs to make 200,000 cars in the next whatever, you know, say 18 months. Mm-hmm. Apple doesn't. Apple doesn't need that kind of capacity yet. So I say they don't need that kind of capacity yet with the implication of adding the phrase to be successful. And again, this is to be successful in Apple's way, not necessarily in comparing them to GM or Ford or anybody else. I think if they just hang out and do what Apple has always done, I don't think it's too late for them at all.
I kind of disagree with you because, as you said, Tesla started off with their sports car. And right. Then they use that to leverage into the sedan, and then they use that to leverage into the Model X and further leverage into the
sure.
broad consumer base with the Model 3. If Apple starts off with an expensive car like an i8, like a BMW i8 for, you know, $70,000 to $80,000 in 2020, I predict it'll be delayed a little bit.
Sure.
Then it might be 2025 before Apple's got a mass market product that can do the growth thing that they want to do.
Okay for them in the smartphone
what
market.
What happened to Microsoft when they came into the tablet market too late and they never did get a footing? And, you know, five years after Apple launched
tablet.
The iPad, they're still only selling a million a quarter.
John, they didn't make a good tablet. I remember going into the Microsoft store. It was
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the benefits or the deficiencies of being late to a market where people seize the market ahead of time, and then you have to come along and.
But you know about Apple, right?
Market share.
They're never early to a market.
Right.
That's true.
And with the iPhone, they went into a market that was already dominated by BlackBerry
and by
Palm. And I mean, that's all you needed right there. Those were your choices. There were other companies making smartphones, but man, especially BlackBerry, they had it all wrapped up.
Yep.
And they were very late to the market, but did okay.
Well, I kind of see this as the television and movie industry being concerned that Apple's going to come in and wipe them out. I think the other automakers in Europe and the United States are already very concerned about Tesla. I mean, when you've got 17 million cars were sold in the United States last year, if you sell 170,000 cars, you've got 1%. And that's pretty rare for one company to seize that much market share. So when you've got people standing in line, and all of a sudden, you've gone from essentially zero to 1% of the car market in the United States. I think everybody else is going to get pretty well ramped up. And Apple's hopes for coming in and making a lot of money and getting the growth that they want could be stymied by the rest of the car industry over the next 5 years. It's what I'm worried about. I'm not saying it's definitely going to happen. I'm saying it's something to think about and be concerned about as Apple works its way through this process.
I kind of think if Apple makes a car that doesn't suck, then they'll be in a position where they can continue to expand in the auto market space at whatever pace they want.
I hope so.
Yeah, but the trick is they have to make a good car.
Right, and I think they know that. And I think they know that even if that means rolling it out a year or two later than they want to, that's the most important thing.
Right. Yeah. They don't want to release the Surface tablet of cars.
No.
I mean, the current model of Surface tablet, it's a perfectly fine tablet.
It's not so bad. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but it doesn't matter because Microsoft rolled out the gate with a subpar product, and everyone continue to buy iPads.
I remember the first, like, this was the story I started to tell. It was like maybe the second or third weekend that the tablet existed. You know, it was relatively new. And mm-hmm. they had Microsoft stores. And so my daughter and I went into one. And they had tables. And on each side of the table, they had like one or two tablets, depending on one or two of these new surfaces. And you could just go find an empty one and just play. You know, it was good. And we found our spot at a table, and the rest of the table was full. There were, you know, four or five other groups of people, you know, hovered each around their tablet, their surface they were playing with. And my daughter and I sort of ignored them at first. And we're like, how do we, like, where's the home button or the on button? Like, what do we press here? And we're like picking it up and looking around. And as we're doing this, you know, our field of vision sort of opens up, and we notice every single other group is doing the exact same thing. They all have these befuddled looks, like, how do we get back to the thing? And they're looking for the button, and it's like, this is a we just looked at each other and just started laughing. Like, this is a disaster for them. And that's what Apple can't do with the car. It needs to roll out, and it needs to be this thing where people experience it and say, oh, yeah, this is cool. You know, I see why this was built. Maybe it's, you know, hopefully in Apple's mind, hopefully people see it and say, ooh, I see why this was built and I want one. It's what I've always wanted, even though I didn't know I wanted it, right? Because that's Apple's MO. And I think mm-hmm. for some people, if Apple succeeds, I think for some people that will absolutely be the case. And you might be talking to three of them right here. But that needs to be Apple's goal, is to, you know, to have this resonate with the Apple faithful, if you will, because that's what they need to do first. Then they can expand beyond the Apple faithful.
Sure. And I just had a thought. Here's a place where Apple could totally screw up their cart without even realizing it. If there's no easy way to put a bike rack on it, that's just going to be a problem.
That's an interesting, yeah. Well,
a couple of weeks ago, I wrote about how, is it going to be one car? Maybe Apple would do more than one car at launch. Maybe they would do a sedan, and maybe they would do an SUV to cover their bases.
I think they'll do one car to start.
Yeah.
But they could expand that out.
Yeah, the Apple car, and then the next year it'll be the Apple car 2 and the Apple car 2 plus. and then the next year it'll be the Apple car 2e. No, sorry. Kids, ask your parents if you don't get the joke.
That's all right. There are like 8 people right now that are really laughing.
Yeah, and for them, I'll say this, the following year, and Waz will really like this one, will be the Apple car 2c, because you'll be able to carry it around with you.
I know, it's going to be great. And I'm also looking forward to the one where they finally do the hybrid style, where it's the Apple Car 2GS.
I like that. That's good.
Yeah. And of those 8 people, we now only have 5 that are laughing.
There's 5. Yeah, that's right.
But I'll take them. Hey, we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is Bushel. And I'm a Bushel user. I've been using them for a year. And what I love about Bushel is that it gives me a really easy way to make sure that I have all the settings for all of my Apple gear correct. So I'm using Bushel to keep track of my iPhone, the 3 iPads that I have to have, my 2 Macs, also my parents' iPhones. And what this has done is it has turned me into the IT and mobile device management team for not only me, but for my family. And they set this up so that businesses could do this. But man, it's great just for individual users as well. I found it to be fantastic. So yeah, it's a mobile device management platform, which can be a scary and intimidating thing, but it's not the way Bushel does it. You don't need to have some crazy computer engineering degree. You don't need to be an IT expert. You just need to be able to someone that can type bushel.com/TDO into a web browser, and then you're pretty much up and running. It's a fantastic service. I love that I can keep track of all my devices, my parents' devices. I know what version of the operating system everyone is running. I can force things like like how strong a password needs to be on a device. And I can make sure all the email settings for everyone are correct. And you can even use this to manage apps that go on specific devices. It is really cool. It's really powerful. And one thing that I had to do just recently, which I was really curious to see how it would work, once a year, that certificate, that digital certificate that tells all the devices you're managing, hey, it's okay for you to keep doing this, well, you have to update that through Apple. And I wasn't sure how that process is going to go, but the Bushel people, they made it so simple. It's just click here, point to this, you're done. And it was like a three-step process. It was wonderful. It was fast. And it was totally seamless. I didn't have to tell my parents, hey, I need you to go do this, this, and this. It was just me, like 3 minutes of my time, and it was done. I love how they make this so easy. They also make it really inexpensive. Three devices, free. Anything after that, $2 a month per device. You totally need to check this out. It's making my life easier, and I love it when everyone's life is easier. So go check it out, bushel.com/TDO, and sign up for your free account and start managing three devices for free. And if you like it as much as I do, you're going to end up spending a couple bucks a month because it's worth it to keep track of all your other devices too. So Bushel, thank you for being our sponsor today. All right, Dave, you are one of the most well-versed people that I have in my inner circle about relating to networking and security features. So I really wanted you on the show today because I figured you'd be able to offer a really great technical perspective to go along with what will probably be my emotional perspective, and then John's well and balanced perspective on the Internet of Things, smart home devices, and the security issues we are facing.
Yeah, that's a good question, or a good topic. Yeah. Is there any aspect? I'll give my initial thought to this, right?
Okay.
You have all these devices in your home that are speaking on the internet, speaking for themselves on the internet, and typically taking your data, not always, but typically at some level, taking data about your home and sending that up to a cloud server somewhere, right? If it's your, your thermostat, and it doesn't matter what brand it is, the temperature in your room, the schedule that you have is all manageable from the cloud. So therefore, that data is in the cloud, but also some historical data winds up being put in the cloud with that too. And that's so there's a hole there. And it depends on what you feel nefarious folks could glean by looking at the history of your temperature. Now, they could look at the schedule of your thermostat and say, okay, I know when this guy's not going to be at his house. You know, you could intuit that, okay, well, if this person's letting the temperature go down to, say, 60 degrees at 8:35 a.m. every weekday, and then at, 5:45 p.m., it's supposed to start creeping back up. Well, pretty sure that guy works 9 to 6. So mm-hmm. I might be able to just hang out in the house all day. Now, you might have another smart home device that tells you when someone's in your house. And that would also be an interesting thing, right? The person with one of these devices might be the person with another. So perhaps it would, they've got an Ecobee. Well, they might also have a drop cam or something. So, I'm not going to go. I'm going to go to the next house. So, there's the data that is being published about you, and these things create those kinds of holes in your life. Do they create target vectors on a network? Typically not, at least not at the moment. When they start using IPv6, there's a little bit more of a concern because many routers have very rudimentary IPv6 firewalls. Most routers don't have firewalls at all, but mm-hmm. they do have a very, very secure method of keeping people out of your home, which is the whole concept of NAT routing. The idea behind that being you get one IP address from your house that is publicly available and only one, and then your router takes the data, all the data that comes into that one IP, and farms it out to the devices in your house that it should go to. And because of the way that works, you're sort of secured. So no one can say, I want to target that guy's Schlage locks and unlock them, right? Mm-hmm. Because your locks don't have a publicly addressable or publicly accessible IP address. With IPv6, they do have a publicly accessible IP address. And now it's up to your router to make sure that the traffic coming in for that IP is filtered accordingly. And it's a hard question to answer, because when I address my lock, I want it to work, but I don't want it to work when, say, you know, that random person over there tries to address it. So how do we deal with that, right? Do we do VPNs? And so firewalls need to get far more, and will get far more complex as IPv6 comes around too. That's a little further off, but not too much further.
All right, so do you think that the built-in security features that Apple requires for HomeKit-compatible devices is going to be the sort of thing that could help alleviate some of these concerns?
Yeah, because it essentially keeps them all talking to a hub. It should keep them all talking to a hub that's then securely communicating with the outside world. But we've already seen it. There's devices that are like, yeah, we do HomeKit and this other thing simultaneous that's totally separate from HomeKit.
Right. And if you can't shut that other thing off, then that becomes an attack vector.
Because not everybody's going to have HomeKit, right? I mean, if I buy an Ecobee thermostat today, I don't necessarily, that doesn't mean that I bought it for its HomeKit compatibility. In fact, I've got a 2-year-old Ecobee thermostat that's not HomeKit compatible. I want my new one to be addressed the same way as the old one. So I'm going to use the Ecobee app. Great. No problem. And I can do it on the web or, you know, whatever. So, mm-hmm. As a customer, I want that flexibility, but in a general sense, customers need to be, it's that, you know, you need to be informed, otherwise you're going to be exposed sort of by default. And I don't mean to single out Ecobee. They're actually one of my favorite smart home vendors. And I don't think they have any security issues that I know of. I'm just saying that, you know, that's an example of why you actually want these things to not just be HomeKit or else.
You know, I'm using an Ecobee also. Mine right now is not set up for HomeKit.
Okay.
And that's because I wanted to do some experimenting and see what I could make it do outside of HomeKit. And didn't even occur to me that what I was doing was, just by its nature, multiple protocols running at the same time. Or multiple platforms running at the same time. So even if I was doing just HomeKit, those other platforms are still there and they're still running.
That's right.
And I know we keep talking about Ecobee, but that's because we both have one. I really love mine.
Yeah.
I think it's cool.
Oh, yeah. They're great. Yeah. It's the best smart thermostat for anyone that lives somewhere where it's cold.
I agree. Yes. Yeah. Totally agree.
And yes, I'm aware that Nest exists. I have one. I have both an Ecobee and a Nest actively running at my residence here. And I will tell you, if you live somewhere where you need heat half the year, the Nest, and you live in a house with more than one room, the Nest is horrible.
All right. That makes me even happier that I bought an Ecobee. But, you know, part of the reason I bought it was because I knew your experiences.
Sure. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. All right. So we're out of time. But what I'm kind of getting out of this is right now we really do have this kind of big open thing where security isn't as strong as it could be when it comes to these devices that are being put in our homes. For the most part, people should be aware that there are issues or potential issues, but maybe shouldn't be losing sleep over it. Is that safe to say?
At the moment, I would agree with that.
Okay. Okay. I'll accept that, especially since I've gone overboard and I have an Ecobee in here. I have Philips Hue lights. I have Lutron Cassetta switches. I have Wemo smart switches. Right behind me, watching me even as we record, I have a Withings home camera.
Yeah, it's easy. One, you know, that's actually one thing that's probably a good piece of advice for all of us, myself included. As you get these home, whatever smart home devices, and I would be pretty loose with that definition, like anything that's connecting to the internet that's just going to sit there and you're going to forget about it in your home, put them all on a list. Because you may not know. I like right now, I mean, even you didn't, like, off the top of your head was like, oh yeah, there's this other thing. Mm-hmm. We all have those things. That's probably the biggest attack vector that exists, is forgetting that you've got something because you stopped using it. And then all of a sudden, like, whoa, that thing's had a, you know, that thing's been security Swiss cheese for 6 months. Oh, yeah.
It fits into my philosophy. Have a plan.
Yeah.
Figure out what the most important problem is. Understand the problem that you need to address, and only attack that problem, and don't just do creative play without being mindful of the implications. And as Jeff said, understand the security of the problems you do solve, and do it mindfully and with a plan.
Yep. And Dave, I totally need to make that list, because as John was talking, I realized, oh yeah, I have some Eve sensors in here as well. Yeah. My list is growing.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Hey, we are out of time. Dave, thank you so much for being here today.
Welcome. My pleasure.
And John, thank you for being here as well.
My pleasure as always.
And Bushel, thank you for being our sponsor. Head over to their website, bushel.com/TDO. Sign up for your free account. Make your life easier, because you know you have more than one device. So keep them all tracked. It's a beautiful, wonderful thing. Trust me. Bushel.com/TDO. Listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.